Lucy rode into town about noon of the day after meeting with Frank. She rode in from the west, and that told Frank the young woman had indeed been out to the diamond spread. She reined up in front of the marshal's office, where Frank was standing on the boardwalk.
Mike will be waiting at Beaver Creek, Marshal, where it splits off before going underground for a time. You know the place?
I do. When?
Right now, Marshal. He left about the same time I did.
Thanks, Lucy. Did you and Mike set a date?
We always talk about getting hitched, Marshal, but we've never gotten right down to planning an actual time because of our families. I'm hoping we might be able to tie the knot when this war is over.
That might be sooner than you think.
It can't be soon enough for me. I wish you luck with Mike.
Thanks, Lucy.
She nodded her head and rode away back toward GP Range. Frank motioned to a young boy across the street, and the boy hot-footed it over to Frank.
Run down to the livery and tell John to saddle my horse, boy.
He handed the boy a 25-cent piece.
Will you do that?
You bet, Marshal. I'm gone!
An hour and a half later, Frank swung down from the saddle and walked up to a young man standing under a lightning-blazed tree and stuck out his hand.
We finally get to meet, Mike.
Marshal Morgan, I'm glad you asked Lucy to set up this meeting. I've wanted to meet you ever since you came into the valleys.
You think we can help put an end to this fight, Mike?
We can try. What do you have in mind?
That's just it, Mike. I don't have a plan. I thought we'd talk some, maybe come up with something.
I brought a coffee pot and some coffee.
I'll get the water and start up a small fire.
Sounds good to me.
Over steaming tin cups of hot, strong coffee, Frank and the younger man talked.
With Pa dead and Mark in control, this war's never gonna end.
How did your father's will read?
A third of the ranch to each of the children, but the oldest son to be in charge. Pa knew I always preached getting along with the farmers. There's plenty of land for us all. What Pa didn't know is that I've been having people file on land and then buying it from them since I came of age. I own a lot of land that Pa thought, and Mark still thinks, is diamond land.
Wise of you. How about the water rights?
Belongs to me. Near about all of it. And I'm a firm believer in building stock ponds.
Drought comes, you'll sure need them. How about working capital for the spread?
I can't answer that one, Marshal. Mark has the combination of Pa's safe. When I ask him about money, he gets mad. But I know where Paul kept his emergency funds. Mark doesn't know about that little hidey hole.
Would your sister back you up against Mark?
I think she would. Oh, hell, I know she would. She wants to get married and get out of here. And I've told her I'll donate some of the land I own for her and her new man to make a start on. She's commented that Mark is acting as crazy as Pa did before he died.
You've lost a few more gunslingers, I heard.
I wish they'd all leave. But there is little chance of that.
How many are left out there, Mike?
18 at last count.
And most of them are very good at their work.
That's one way of putting it.
I hear you're pretty good hand with the six gun yourself, Mike.
My friend Lucy talks too much, Marshal.
I think she's a good kid.
Oh, she is. Both she and my sister Peaches are all mouth, nothing more. They enjoy shocking people, especially some of those straight-laced old biddies in town.
I witnessed that.
I heard. You also scare the crap out of both those girls.
They needed it.
All right. Marshal Morgan, I'll see if I can't come up with a plan to wrest the leadership of the diamond from my brother. But if my sister and I succeed in doing that, you know what's gonna happen.
Tell me. I want to hear it from you. I want you to fully understand this move.
My brother will turn outlaw to save his hold on the diamond. He's got enough money to buy support from the gunslingers, and he'll try to kill me. And if he fails, he'll hit the Hoot Owl Trail and still try to keep his range war going.
Frank poured another cup of coffee and leaned back against an old weather-beaten log.
That might happen. Unless he pulls something that I can arrest him on and hold him long enough for you to take control of the diamond and talk some sense into him.
That might just work. But when Mark rides off Diamond Range, he's got half a dozen hired guns with him. Trying to arrest him will turn bloody in a heartbeat.
How about your regular cowhands?
They'll back me. To a man.
Quietly pass the word to them to stick close to you and Peaches.
I already have.
A week had passed without a single incident of violence in the town or in the series of valleys. The farmers' crops were looking good, and the growing season, while relatively short, promised to yield a bumper crop. The several dozen carpenters who had been busy from spring to late summer in Valley View were now mostly gone. Only one crew remained in town doing finishing work. Valley View now boasted a full 2.5-block-long main street with buildings on both sides of the wide street. The new hotel was finished, 2 stories high. Some of the more expensive rooms featured a bath and other more personal facilities.
Never heard of such a thing. It don't seem a bit sanitary to me.
It's progress, John.
It's nasty, if you ask me.
A new saloon was in operation. There were clothing stores for men and women, a leather and saddle store with shoe and boot repair. The apothecary shop featured the latest in medicines, mixed and prepared right there before your eyes, if you wanted to watch. Dr. Archer had a small clinic added to his office for the more seriously ill, where they could be kept overnight in a series of small bunk beds lined up on either side of the room. A confectionery shop with all kinds of candy and other sweet goodies, featuring ice cream for both kids and adults, had been added to the main street. A town hall had been built, which would also be used as a place for stage plays.
Maybe they'll bring in that play about you, Frank.
The day they do is the day I leave.
Valley View also had a band, made up of local people. They had several trumpets, a trombone, a tuba, and included a drummer and a cymbal crasher. Uniforms had been ordered for the band. Several of the farmers' wives got together and opened a bakery, featuring all sorts of pies and cakes and fresh-baked bread, along with jellies and preserves and fresh-brewed coffee. The place was an immediate hit with the townspeople. And Frank had not heard a word from Mike Rogers, nor had he seen any more gunfighters leave the area. Things were going too well to suit Frank. He knew only too well about the lull before a storm. He'd been personally involved in many blow-ups over the years. Mayor Joe Wallace walked up to Frank and John.
What's the matter, Marshal? You look plumb grim.
Things are going really well, Joe. Too well, maybe. I'm just waiting for the other boot to drop.
Well, maybe the other boot isn't gonna drop, Frank. There's been no trouble for over a week. No attacks on homesteads, no shootings here in town, nothing. Maybe you're looking on the dark side for no reason.
Maybe. I hope so, but I doubt it.
Relax, Marshal. Everything is going to be just fine.
Joe, you're a born politician.
Maybe so, Frank. Maybe so.
He waved his hand at the busy street.
But you can't deny progress now, can you?
I reckon not.
But you'll still stand around looking glum, worrying over nothing, while you wait for the lid to blow off?
Before Frank could reply, the men turned to look as a fast-moving buckboard came up the street, coming in from the west side of the valley.
What the hell? That driver's going too fast. There are women and kids out this morning.
Who is that?
I don't know his name. I've seen him around a few times. I think he rides for the Diamond Spread.
Good Doc Archer. Got a man shot here.
Frank stepped out into the street and ran alongside the racing horses for a dozen steps until he could grab their halters and halt the wagon.
What's going on?
Frank moved to the rear of the buckboard, peering over the sideboard.
It's Mike Rogers, Marshal. He's been shot.
Over here!
Doc Archer was on the boardwalk in front of his office as he motioned toward the wagon.
Who shot him?
His brother, Mark!
The driver jerked the horses' heads around and pulled the wagon over in front of the doctor's office. Frank walked back to the mayor while several citizens helped pick Mike's limp body out of the buckboard and carry it into Dr. Archer's office.
You mentioned something about the lid blowing off, Joe. Well, it just blew.
I wonder why Mark would want to shoot his brother.
Frank had a pretty good idea, but he wasn't about to say until he found out exactly what had happened out of the Diamond Spread. Peaches came fogging it up in a cloud of dust as Mike was being carried into Doc Archer's clinic. She dumped off her pony and onto the boardwalk. Frank grabbed her and held her back.
Hold on, Peaches. He's still alive.
Get off of me!
Talk to me. Tell me what happened.
I wasn't home, but a couple of the hands were. Jeff and Hootie said Mark and Mike had been arguing for about an hour. Mark was wearing a gun, Mike wasn't. Mike came staggering out of the house holding his side. Mark came running out after him, yelling and cussing, saying he was gonna finish the job. Jeff and Hootie got between him, and Mark backed away. Jeff got the wagon ready, and Hootie rode out to get me. That's all I know.
Where is Mark now?
Still out at the ranch, I guess.
Will Mike file charges against his brother?
You bet he will.
As soon as the doctor will let me talk to him, I'll get rolling on that and ride out to get Mark.
Better go in ready to shoot, Marshal. Mark won't come in easy. You can bet on it.
I'll worry about that, Peaches. You go on in and be with your brother for a time.
Frank checked his rifle, a .44-40, before mounting up. John Platt walked into the livery through the huge front doors.
I heard you're going out to the diamond alone?
It's my job, John.
You ought to put together a posse. It's crazy going out after Mark alone. He's surrounded by gunslingers.
I doubt that Mark will still be at the ranch, John. He may be like his father, a little nutty, but he's not stupid. He's probably headed for the high country, hoping this thing will blow over.
Has Mike filed charges against his brother?
Not yet. I'm waiting to talk to him.
While you're waiting for that, I'll put together some men to ride with you.
If you think that's best.
I think it is.
Mayor Joe Wallace walked up in time to catch the last bit of conversation.
And I've already got half dozen lined up ready to go.
It's seven. I'm in.
All right. Let me see if Mike can tell me anything. You boys get saddled up.
The bullet from his brother's gun struck Mike in his left flank and passed clear through.
I don't believe it hit anything vital, or he would never have survived the ride to town in the back of a wagon. He's going to be all right. What he needs now is rest.
Did he say anything, Doc?
He said his brother shot him. Said they were arguing about ending the Valley War and cutting down the herd a bit. Mike said, all of a sudden, with no warning except for some cursing, his brother pulled out his pistol and shot him. Then he laughed about it. Mike said, he feels sure his brother has lost his mind.
He's sleeping now?
Yes. I gave him a dose of laudanum so he would get some rest. That's the best medicine for him now.
Peaches was standing on the boardwalk outside the doctor's office. She was wearing a gun belt, a .32-20 in the holster, and she looked as if she was ready to use it.
Where do you think you're going?
With you.
The hell you are.
The hell I'm not. You can't keep me from going back home, Marshal. I'd damn sure like to see you try.
Frank smiled at the young woman. The last thing he wanted was to tangle with Peaches.
Suit yourself, Peaches. Now let's ride.
I got me a fresh horse. Jeff and Hootie got some fresh mounts from the livery. Anytime you're ready, Marshal. I want to get home. I got some orders to give the diamond hands.
Five more locals had joined the posse, all of the men heavily armed and ready for trouble if it came to that. To a man, they wanted the Valley Wars over with. Harvey Pitts, a lawyer who had recently moved into Valley View, stepped off the boardwalk to confront Frank and the posse.
I'm riding with you men. I want to make certain this doesn't turn into a lynch mob.
There'll be no lynching, Harvey. I doubt we'll even see Mark Rogers. I'll make a bet he's headed for the mountains and timber.
I'm riding with you.
Get mounted then, and be quick about it.
I'm coming also.
Reverend Carmody came up on a borrowed horse.
Someone might need some spiritual guidance.
Yeah.
Lucy Perkins then joined the group.
You can pray over the bastards once we hang them.
Like Peaches, Lucy had a pistol on her hip and fire in her eyes.
Where'd you come from? I come into town to shop. I just left the doctor's office. I saw Mike. He's sleeping. The doc says he's gonna be all right.
There'll be no hanging, Lucy. If we find Mark, I'll arrest him, not hang him.
Lawyer Pitts looked at Frank for a silent moment.
Yes, I believe you mean that, Marshal. Despite your rather nasty reputation, I believe you.
Wonderful. Let's ride.
Just as Frank had predicted, Mark Rogers and his hired gunslingers were not at the ranch. A hand met the posse in the front yard.
They took off right after you left, Miss Peaches. They headed straight north for the mountains.
Peaches stepped down from the saddle.
All right, Jim. Get the boys together. Until Mike is back on his feet, I'll be running this spread. And effective right now, there are going to be some changes made.
Yes, ma'am.
Lucy, will you stay with me for a time? We'll ride back into town later on this afternoon and see about Mike.
Sure, I will.
Lucy hopped down from the saddle, and the two young women walked in the ranch house.
They got a good 3 to 4 hour jump on us, boys.
The rotten bastard cleaned out the safe!
Relax. Mike told me he knows where your dad kept some working capital. And you can get the boys to round it up some cattle right now to sell, before your brother rustles them.
And you can bet he'd do it, too. Great idea, Marshal. Hootie, tell the cook to get the chuck wagon ready, then get the boys. We're starting a roundup.
Yes, ma'am.
Frank turned to the posse.
John, you and Earl come with me. We'll do some tracking for a time. The rest of you men can head back home.
You sure, Frank?
I'm sure, Joe. Personally, I don't think we'll see Mark for some time. He's running scared and won't be back until emotions cool down. if he or any of his hired guns, and they're all outlaws now in the eyes of the law anyway, show up on Diamond Range, some of the regular hands will shoot him dead, and Mark knows that.
The grizzled old cook walked toward the barn to hitch up a team.
You bet we will.
Here now, there'll be none of that.
Who the hell are you?
I'm an attorney at law, sir.
Yeah? Well, that don't spell buffalo crap to me. My advice to you is this. You best carry your gimpy ass back to town and leave the lawn to those who know how to do it.
Well,
the cook gave him a vulgar hand gesture and walked on.
I want to thank you guys.
He then motioned to John and Earl. The three men waved goodbye to their friends and lifted their reins. John glanced over his shoulder after they'd been riding for a couple of hours.
Lawyer Pitts and Preacher Carmody is following us.
I can't force them to turn back. If they catch a bullet, it's their own fault.
Earl looked back at the two men.
Do neither of them have a bedroll or any supplies?
Then it's gonna be a cold, hungry night for them.
Nights do get right chilly in this country.
And we'll be in rough country in another hour.
The preacher and the lawyer realized they had made a mistake when the sun began to dip into the western horizon.
I think we'll head back to town.
Good idea.
There's a small matter, however, Frank.
You don't know the way back.
Well, in a word, yes.
Head straight southeast. You'll come to the main road. There's no way in hell you can miss it.
That way?
No, Richard. That's southwest. But, that'll take you to the road, too. You'll just be miles west of Valley View.
After the preacher and lawyer left, John and Earl had gone up the ridge, surveying the terrain.
A bunch split up, Frank. Looks like they paired up and then scattered in all directions.
I thought they would. Come on back.
John and Earl returned.
There's no point in us going on a wild goose chase. We'll be chasing the wind. Let's head on back to town. Mark will show up one of these days.
And his hired guns?
As long as Mark has the money to pay them, they'll stay. They'll all show up eventually. I'll wire the sheriffs in adjoining counties to tell them what's happening. Come on, we'll be back in time for supper.
5 will get you 10. We'll be back in town 5 hours before the preacher and the lawyer.
You'll not get a bet from me on that, John. Now, if you want to wager whether we have to send out a hunting party to bring them in or not.
Only if I get to bet on them getting plumb lost.
Mike was awake and alert when Frank and the remaining members of the posse got back to town. They stood by his bedside.
The doc tells me you're going to be just fine, Mike.
I'll be up and looking for that worthless brother of mine before you know it, Marshal.
Let me take care of your brother, Mike. You just get well and get back to running the diamond.
I'll bet you Peaches can run it just as good as I can.
Yeah, she's got the boys rounding up some cattle now to sell.
Good for her. The doc says I can go home in 3 or 4 days, but I'll have to stay close to a bed for about a week.
You rest, Mike. I'll stop by tomorrow. Lucy and Peaches will be coming into town later on this evening.
See you, Marshal.
Frank had ridden into town just as dawn cracked the dark skies open. At the Sunburst Cafe, Charlie and Becky had the biscuits baked and the coffee ready to pour.
Everything quiet last night, Charlie?
Quiet as a church here in town. You think Mark Rogers has left the country?
No, he's still around. I figure as soon as he learns his brother is all right, he'll make a move.
Then when that's handled, the war will really be over, won't it?
Should be.
Frank buttered a biscuit with fresh churned butter. The Jordans were really good cooks. Frank would have been content to just sit and eat buttered biscuits for breakfast, but before he could fill up on biscuits...
Enjoy, Marshal.
Charlie set a plate of ham and eggs before him. After breakfast, Frank strolled over to the post office, which had been open for a couple of weeks, then to his office. There he sat down and looked over his mail. There was a letter from his attorney in Denver. A new gold strike had been hit in the mountains, the mine owned by one of the companies Frank owned stock in, and Frank was now considerably wealthier. The lawyer said the money was now on deposit at a bank in Denver. Frank put the letter in his pocket and smiled. The $50 a month he was being paid for his marshal's work was going into the local bank. It would stay there until he found someone who needed it more than he did. Frank would never touch it. He sure as hell didn't need it. The other two letters addressed to him were from the legal firms handling his stock in railroads, shipping, and factories. He quickly scanned both letters. They told him how much he had earned thus far this year and how much he currently had on deposit. It was quite an impressive sum. More money in various banks. It was a sum of money that was almost unbelievable to Frank. More money than he could spend in several lifetimes, even if he went hog wild crazy trying to spend it all. He rolled a cigarette and leaned back in his swivel desk chair. John Platt walked in with a solemn face on.
Don, Pete Dancer just rode in, Frank. Alone. Stabled his horse with me and told me if he didn't come back for him, I could have the horse and rig. Just pay for his funeral. Said he'd be waiting for you over at the new saloon. You don't seem surprised at his riding in, Frank.
I'm not. Pete's too good a man to take orders from an asshole like Mark Rogers.
Well, that don't explain his coming in to brace you.
It does to me, John.
I never understand gunfighters.
How could you? We don't really understand ourselves.
The saloon was not due to open for several hours, but Pete had unofficially opened it by threatening the old swamper. The gunslinger was propped up at the bar with a coffee.
Come in and have a cup, Morgan.
Believe I will, Pete.
Frank picked up a coffee and walked behind the bar to the coffee pot. The swamper headed out the back door with Frank's approach.
Yeah, you queered a good deal for us, Frank.
Oh? Now how did I do that?
Siding with the sodbusters and convincing the GP to call off their fight.
It's called progress, Pete. There's land enough for everybody.
You know why I come into town, Frank.
This doesn't have to be, Pete. The war is over. Ride on out of here. I won't try to stop you.
Oh, I plan on riding out, Frank.
Is that why you told the liveryman to keep your horse and rig if you don't come back to claim them?
You're pretty good, Morgan. I like to get everything covered after I make up my mind to do something.
It's a wise move.
Our day is just about over, Morgan. I figure men like us should go out the way we've lived.
I don't plan on going out anytime soon, Pete.
Yeah. Well, you probably won't.
You go into this fight with that attitude and you won't make it, Pete. So why go into it?
Got to, Morgan.
Nah, Pete. You don't have to do this. And I don't want to do it.
The hell's the matter with you, Morgan?
Nothing. I'm just talking to a man I've known for years.
We're not friends, Morgan.
But we've never really been enemies.
Well, yeah, I reckon that's true. I reckon I could just ride out, and we could call this a draw, couldn't we, Morgan?
We sure could, Pete. Why don't we just call it even? Both of us walk away.
Huh. I come in here ready to die, and damned if you ain't talked me out of it. You ever think of becoming a preacher, Morgan?
No, Pete. I never given that any thought at all.
You ever thought of hanging up your gun?
Plenty of times.
You know anyone who's ever done it?
Several. Dave Moore did it just a few months ago. He's farming out in the valley now.
Yeah, I know. How's he doing?
Working from can to can't and loving every minute of it.
Now you see him, you give him my best.
I will. Pete, I'm told Oregon is good farm country. There's plenty of land to be had for a man who isn't afraid of work.
I growed up on a farm, Morgan. I damn sure ain't afraid of work. And I know something about farming.
Might think about that, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah, I will. You really think a man like me could give it all up?
Yeah, I do.
Huh. You haven't.
You had any plays performed, songs sung, and books and news articles written about you, Pete?
No. Thank the good Lord. But I see what you mean. Yeah, I read some of them books about you. Don't take this the wrong way, but I laughed all the way through them.
They're awful for a fact.
Farming, huh? Well, it's a thought.
Do it, Pete. Show us both you can do it.
By the Lord, I think I will, Frank. Yes, I will. You ain't asked question one about Mark Rogers or the men with him.
I'm not worried about him, Pete.
I left him before we reached the mountains. Mark is crazy as his pa. Maybe worse. That's a bad bunch with him, Frank. Some of them sworn to kill you.
I know.
I don't know what they're planning. I left before Mark could lay out any scheme.
Ride west for a few days, Pete, then cut north. Keep a close eye on your back trail.
Good idea. I can do that. Frank, will you shake hands with me before I pull out?
I'd be proud to do that, Pete.
The two top guns shook hands, and Pete Dancer walked out of the saloon and into the cold morning. Frank stood for a moment at the bar. The old swamper stuck his head around a corner.
No shooting?
Nope. We talked it out.
Talked? Well, I'll be damned. Ain't that something?
John Platt walked in, accompanied by Doc Archer and Joe Wallace.
Dancer was smiling. Went to get his horse. What the hell did you two talk about?
Life and death, and choices a man has while on this earth, John.
Don't tell me he's given up gunslinging.
He's gonna try.
Heading west when he left my place. You going to California?
Frank hesitated for just a few seconds. Might as well give Pete another small chance in this game of life and death.
Yeah, John. Southern California. He owns a business out there. Dry goods, I think.
Do tell. Well, I wish him luck.
So do I, John. So do I.
He say anything about Mark?
Just that he was crazy.
Well, hell, we all know that.
We'll deal with Mark when we see him, I reckon. How's Mike, Doc?
In good shape. He can go home in a couple of days.
We're gonna have us a right nice town here. Yes, sir. A right nice town.
I think you're ready to, Mayor. Ain't no gonna about it.
Now that we've all agreed on that, and seeing as how the saloon's already open, how about us breaking open a bottle of the good stuff and having us a drink on it?
Damned if that ain't a great idea, John.
Several weeks passed very uneventfully. Mike Rogers went back to his ranch, and after a few days in bed, began doing light office work. Mike and Lucy Perkins announced their engagement, as did Peaches and her gentleman friend who ran a ranch over near the county seat. It was to be a double wedding held in Valley View, with the services conducted by Reverend Richard Carmody. The crops were all in for that growing season, and it was a bumper crop for the homesteaders in the valleys. School had started in Valley View, and the schoolhouse was filled with kids, some of whom had never before attended a regular school, having been schooled at home by their parents, if they had any schooling at all, and many had not. In one short summer, the size and population of Valley View had grown phenomenally. The governor of the territory was making plans to visit the town. The mayor and town council were quite satisfied with the way things were going.
When the governor's plans are firm, I'm gonna pull out. You boys better be thinking about a new marshal.
What are you talking about, Frank? We want you to stay.
I'm a known gunfighter, Joe. It wouldn't look good for someone like me to be wearing a star in your town.
That's nonsense. We don't want nobody else, Frank.
I'll be moving on. Start looking for a new marshal. Believe me, it's for the best. Otherwise, you'll end up with a bunch of reputation hunters coming around here trying to make a name for themselves by killing me.
But you settled the troubles of not only this town, but the entire valley. We want you to stay.
I'll be moving on.
How can we ever repay you?
Your friendship is plenty payment enough. I'll never forget this town, or the many friends and neighbors I've met here. Believe it.
Frank had already made arrangements to give his farm, lock, stock, and barrel, to a young couple who had just moved into the valley. They had lost everything to a fire on the trail. To say they were stunned at the generosity of Frank Morgan would be an understatement. Many of the gunslingers that had ridden off with Mark Rogers had been spotted as far south as Kansas, riding alone or in pairs. One had been arrested for stealing, and he had told his sheriff that most of the gang had broken up, each going his separate way. Mark had refused to share with them the money he had taken from his late father's safe, and then had killed one of the gang for no reason, according to the gun hand. He had no idea where Mark Rogers was, but he hoped he was dead. Frank shared the telegram with Mike. Mike could only shake his head.
I guess we'll never see my brother again.
He's crazy, Mike. Don't let your guard down just yet. There's no telling what he's liable to do.
I guess you're right, Marshal. Say, me and Lucy will be getting married this fall. I guess you heard.
I did. I'm happy for you both.
Will you be here for the wedding?
Probably not, Mike. I plan to pull out in a few days. I just wanted to stop by and give you my congratulations and best wishes. And to say goodbye.
Good luck to you, Marshal Morgan. I won't forget you.
Give my best to Lucy and to your sister.
I will. I wish you were staying, but you're welcome here any time, Marshal. I mean that.
I know you do. See you around, Mike.
A On a cool, crisp, early fall morning, just before dawn, Frank Morgan rode out of the town, drifting south. He did not look back at the town of Valley View, the town he'd helped build. He couldn't help feeling some pride in his soul when he passed farm after farm along the way, farms that wouldn't have been there except for him.
See that, Wolf?
They passed yet another farm with a man and his wife out working in the fields.
Your master did that. Aren't you proud of me?
Wolf glanced up, his tongue hanging out. Frank glanced down at him.
Yep.
The man in the field stopped his work and leaned on the handle of his hoe. He took off his hat and sleeved sweat off his brow. And then he nudged his wife and waved at Frank.
Howdy, Marshal. Like to come in and have a piece of pie and some coffee?
Frank thought about it for just a moment.
Sure, I'd be right obliged.
He pulled Stormy's head around and headed up the trail toward the farmhouse in the distance. Just across the line in Colorado, Frank stepped down from the saddle in front of a country store 3 days later.
Don't turn around, Drifter.
Frank knew the voice.
Reggie?
Yeah, Drifter. Reggie, now I'm going to kill you. Step away from your horse, and then slow-like turn and face me.
Frank walked away from Stormy and then slowly turned to face the gunslinger.
I heard you boys pulled out from Mark Rogers. The war's over. What's your beef with me now?
You're you. That's what.
Not much of a reason, Reggie.
It's reason enough. You ready, Drifter?
I'd rather we talk this out, Reggie.
You done turned yeller on me, Drifter?
No, Reggie, I don't want to have to kill you, that's all.
He glanced around at the clear blue sky and the snow-capped mountain peaks in the distance.
It's a damn pretty day, Reggie. Shame to spill blood on a day like this.
Huh? Hell, Morgan. You're an old man. Hell. Man talking about how pretty the day is ain't no danger to anybody anymore. That's for sure.
Then there isn't much point in standing here jawing, is there?
I reckon not.
Frank was ready. Reggie pulled iron. Frank put a bullet in the man's belly before Reggie could clear leather.
Damn!
Reggie doubled over with his hands crossed over his stomach as he sank to his knees in the dirt.
I should have known better. I should have just gone on with them others and let you be.
Frank said nothing. He stood there with the hammer eared back on his peacemaker and waited for Reggie to topple over. He'd long since learned never to count a man out until he breathed his last breath. Reggie tried to get up, but succeeded only in falling over on his face. A man and a woman stepped out of the country store to stand on the porch and stare.
Help me!
Reggie held up a hand covered with blood out to them.
Ain't nothing neither of us can do, mister.
The man glanced nervously at Frank.
We ain't doctors.
Then both of you can go to hell!
That's not a very nice thing to say. The Lord will frown on you for saying that.
Reggie did not reply. He was dead, face down in the dirt, and long past caring what the Lord would think of anything.
Who are you, mister?
Frank Morgan.
Lord have mercy! Frank Morgan right there in front of us, Otis.
I see him. What are you going to do with the man you shot, Mr. Morgan?
I'm not going to do anything with him. But you can have what's in his pockets and his horse, saddle, and guns if you bury him.
Huh. I reckon that's more than a good swap. All right, we'll do that.
You run this general store?
I sure do.
I need supplies. I'll be looking around while you dig the hole.
Well, sounds just fine to me. Nell, you go fetch a shovel for me, will you?
You got any coffee ready to drink?
I sure do. It's on the stove. Help yourself.
He hesitated and glanced at his wife, Nell, as if she might contradict him.
No charge for the coffee.
Thanks.
Frank laid some supplies on the counter, then helped himself to a cup of coffee. He found a week's old newspaper and sat down to catch up on the news around the country.
That fella you shot had a wad of cash on him, Mr. Morgan.
Keep it.
All of it?
Sure.
But there's $500 here, Mr. Morgan.
The dead man doesn't have any use for it, does he?
Well, no, sir, I reckon he don't. Don't you want part of it?
No. You fix me something to eat and let me bunk in your barn tonight, and we'll call it even. How about it?
The man and woman exchanged glances.
Well, seems like you're getting a short end of this deal, Mr. Morgan. But if that's the way you want it...
That's the way I want it.
Frank was up and gone into the mist the next morning, drifting south. He took no joy or satisfaction in the killing of Reggie. Reggie wanted a showdown. He got it. It was over and done. Frank put it out of his mind. That was something he had trained himself to do years back. He knew men who had killed other men and eventually went to pieces over it. Not Frank. Some trouble hunter wanted trouble with the drifter, he'd better have his will all written out. And when it was over, Frank would walk away and have a smoke and a cup of coffee. He'd never in his life killed anyone that didn't sorely need it, and he saw no percentage in worrying about it, so he didn't. It was as simple and as complicated as that. At a still active trading post in Colorado, Frank pulled up and led his horses into the barn.
Hell with this, Wolf. Let's hole up here until the weather clears. How about it?
Wolf moved over to a corner before he commenced to shaking the water off his coat.
Well, that settles it then. You stay here, Wolf. I'll check things out in the post.
Frank checked the brands on the half dozen or so other horses stabled in the barn. Doing this had saved his life on more than one occasion when it kept him from walking into an ambush. He did not recognize any of the brands or horses. Four men were seated at a table, sharing a bottle of whiskey. They looked up at Frank's entrance. Frank recognized one immediately. Jake Faber, a gunslick from Arizona. He did not know the other three.
Well, well. If it ain't the living legend.
What are you talking about?
Frank Morgan.
The men stared at Frank as he moved across the room and took a seat at the table as far away from the quartet as possible.
You gotta be joking.
Nope. That's the drifter himself. What the hell are you doing in this part of the country, Morgan?
Passing through, Jake. You got a problem with that?
I might.
Frank looked at the man behind the rough bar.
Coffee. Bring the pot and the sugar bowl.
You going sissy on us, drifter? Gotta have some sweetener in your coffee? Maybe you better get the post owner's wife to make you a sugar tit before you leave.
I might just do that, Jake. But before I do that, I'll have him bring in a bucket of black paint.
Huh? What you gonna paint?
I'm gonna try to cover up that yellow streak that's running up and down your back.
Jake flushed and pushed back his chair.
Don't you do anything you'll regret, Jake. When you make a mistake with me, it could well be your last one.
I ain't scared of you, drifter.
Oh, sit down, Jake. Don't be a fool. That's Frank Morgan, remember?
I know who it is, but I ain't standing for no man calling me yeller. You take back what you said, Morgan. You hear me? You take it back.
Frank carefully stirred his coffee in silence.
I'll kill you, Morgan!
Jake jumped to his feet.
You hear me? Stand and face me, you bastard!
Jake was so mad he was trembling. His hand was poised over the butt of his six gun.
Stand up, Morgan!
Nah, Jake, you sit down. You don't really want to pull on me, do you, Jake?
Jake hesitated for a moment.
Damn.
He sat back down.
Jake, you're not a coward. You just have a tendency to let your ass overload your mouth. And then you don't know how to get out of the crap you stepped in.
Oh, that sure is God's truth.
Jake shook his head, grinned crookedly, and said nothing in rebuttal. Frank looked at the man behind the counter.
Got anything cooked?
Stew, fresh baked bread, and apple pie.
Start serving. You're looking at a hungry man.
He glanced over at the other table and saw that there was no food on it, just whiskey.
And bring my friends plenty also. They looked like they could use a bite to eat.
We don't need no charity, Morgan.
This isn't charity, Jake. I'm just being neighborly is all.
Oh, in that case...
Frank had gotten a second big bowl of stew and half a loaf of bread for Wolf in the barn. As Frank fed the horses, Jake and his friends saddled up and mounted.
You boys pulling out in this weather?
Got a job waiting for us south of here. Sodbuster's moving in, cutting up the range. Some of the big spreads is paying fighting wages.
You boys are fighting progress, you know that, don't you?
What do you mean, Morgan?
The law's on the side of the settlers. There's plenty of land for everybody.
This is cattle country, Morgan. No place for farmers and their damn fences and plows. See you around. We're gone.
Frank watched them ride away in the downpour. He was not unhappy to see them leave. Frank had always felt Jake Faber was not playing with a full deck of cards, and such men were dangerous. You never knew what they were going to do, since they weren't constrained by logic. He had a strong hunch he'd be seeing Jake again. Frank climbed up in the loft and smiled as he looked around. It was filled with fresh-cut hay and smelled wonderful. He would sleep warm and dry later on this night. Frank waited until Wolf was finished with his stew, and then he took the wooden bowl he'd used to feed Wolf back into the post. Frank handed the post owner's wife the bowl.
I wish we'd get another dog. I like dogs. They're good company.
When another one shows up, we'll feed it and keep it, like I've told you time and again. I ain't seen a dog out here in months. Them that do run off from a wagon train, if they're even big enough to stay alive. Sometimes hook up with a coyote pack.
Can I get another coffee, please?
Sure.
Frank walked over to a table near the window. He watched the rain.
You really Frank Morgan?
The man was wiping down the rough-hewn board that served as a bar.
Yeah, I am.
Read a book about you a couple years ago. You really killed 1,000 white men?
No, those books tend to stretch the truth.
You watch that damn Jake Faber. I've been knowing him off and on for a long time. He ain't altogether up there, if you know what I mean.
I know. I've known Jake for a long time, too. I'm always careful about my back trail.
He was accused of ambushing and killing a man last year, but no one could get enough proof on him for an arrest. But he done it. Everyone who knows him believes that.
I do. Good coffee.
I'll tell my old woman. That'll please her. She's fixing steak and potatoes for supper, and she baked a cake, too. She's a good cook. Aggravating as hell at times, but a good cook.
I'll put in my supper order right now. I do like my steaks.
You want me to cook one up for your dog, too?
Sure. He deserves it.
Jake Faber walked in.
I told the others to go on. I'd catch up with them after I dealt with you, Morgan.
You're making a mistake, Jake. You should have kept on going.
I ain't no coward, Morgan.
I believe I straightened all that out, Jake, when I bought you dinner. Why don't you just let it alone?
I want to see you beg me to let you live, Morgan. You do that, and I'll ride on out.
You know that isn't gonna happen, Jake. Why don't you sit down and have some coffee with me? We'll talk this out.
I'll drink me a cup whilst I look at your dead body and laugh, Morgan.
That isn't gonna happen, Jake. Come on, sit down.
Hell with you, Morgan. I come back to kill you.
The couple that ran the old trading post watched as Frank Morgan's face changed. His eyes turned flint hard and cold. His features seemed to tighten.
Then do your damnedest, Jake.
Frank let his right leg straighten out with his right hand resting on his thigh.
I'm tired of trying to talk sense to you.
Jake dragged iron, the muzzle of his .44 just clearing the leather. The bullet struck Jake in the chest and knocked him back. He landed on his face in the sloppy mud outside and did not move.
Oh boy! I seen some fast guns in my years out here, but you top the list, Frank Morgan. You are grease lightning with that .45.
Frank stepped out onto the porch and looked down at Jake for a moment. He grabbed Jake by the arms, dragging the man over to the bar. The trading post owner followed Frank.
You want to bury him now?
Might as well. He'll start puffing up and smelling if we don't.
I'll fetch a couple shovels.
After a change into dry clothing, Frank walked back to the post for coffee and conversation. The post owner placed a fresh pot and cup on the table.
Where about you heading, Mr. Morgan?
Thought I'd wander down into Oklahoma territory.
Stay out of no man's land. That place is wild and woolly. That's a real good place to avoid.
So I've heard.
But you're gonna check it out, ain't you?
I thought I might.
Frank built up the fire in the rusted stove in the old shack and put on water to boil. He had stabled his horses in the rickety shed out back and given them the last of the grain. It was damn cold out. He wasn't exactly sure where he was, but he thought he was in Colorado. He wasn't sure what the date was either, but he felt it was close to the end of November. If it wasn't, it damn sure ought to be, judging by the weather.
We gotta find us a trading post somewhere, Wolf. We're running out of everything.
Wolf looked at his master. He wasn't worried. He had killed a fat rabbit earlier that day and had a fine meal. Now he lay by the fire and was ready for a night's sleep. Wolf closed his eyes. Life just didn't get much better. Frank smiled at his four-legged companion.
we find us a more comfortable place to hole up for a time, you and me, boy, are gonna have us a bath.
That opened Wolf's eyes for a moment. He did not like baths. Wolf stared at Frank for a long time. He then closed his eyes again.
Gotta find us a better place than this to ride out the winter. One good wind and this place will fall down. But I reckon it'll have to do for tonight.
The morning dawned bright and sunny and cold. Frank continued south. 2 days later, he came upon a trading post.
You're about 75 miles from the strip, mister. Was I you? I turned either west or east. Stay the hell out of that area. Ain't no fitting place for a white man.
I heard it was rough.
Rough? Mister, they's 3-4 killings every day down yonder. Outlaws and scum run that place.
Well, I'm looking for an old friend of mine. I heard he might be somewhere in no man's land.
You a lawman?
Nah, just a man looking for an old friend.
Best shy away from no man's land, partner. Don't no decent person live there.
As he drew closer to the northern boundary of no man's land, he began to see the remains of homesteads, half-burned cabins, fields that had one time felt the bite of a plow, small gardens that had all gone to seed, and tiny grave sites. The homesteaders had built too close to outlaw territory and had paid a terrible price for doing so. Back at the trading post, the owner had told him that Kansas didn't want the strip of land and neither did Texas. He reckoned that someday Oklahoma would have to take it, but for now it was strictly no man's land, a haven for the scum of the earth. About 10 miles from the narrow strip of land, Frank was halted by a posse, some 20 strong. They had been heading east and intersected Frank on his way south.
You got a name?
Frank Morgan.
The man narrowed his eyes and frowned.
You trying to be funny, mister?
No. You asked my name, I told you.
He's Frank Morgan. I seen his picture lots of times. You bounty hunting?
No.
Where are you heading?
Down that away.
That's no man's land, Morgan.
I know it.
No man in his right mind rides into that area alone. That strip of land is home to the vilest kind of criminal, scum of the earth.
So I've heard.
And you're still heading in there?
Yeah.
Mind if I ask why?
I'm the curious type.
You go in yonder alone and you're gonna be the dead type, Morgan. Do you know anything at all about that area?
No, not a whole lot. But I intend to find out.
Suit yourself.
I plan on doing just that.
There's a trading post right on the line, Morgan. About 2 hours' ride south. Man who runs it stays neutral. The outlaws let him stay in business because of that. Once you ride past that post, you're in no man's land. God help you.
The leader of the posse lifted the reins and rode away, the posse following. As the men passed him, Frank received a lot of very curious glances. Frank rode on, heading south. He really didn't know why he was heading into outlaw country. Like he had told the men of the posse, he was simply the curious type. He topped a small rise and reined up, sitting his horse, looking down at several ramshackle buildings and the trading post. There were half a dozen horses tied at hitch rails in the front. There was a barn set off to the south side of the post. Frank could not tell if more horses were stabled there. He slowly rode down to the post. Frank swung down from the saddle and stood for a moment, looking around.
You stay here, Wolf.
Stepping into the post, he stood and looked around as he let his eyes adjust to the low light of the gloomy interior. Half a dozen men sat at tables, drinking and playing cards. Frank recognized one immediately.
Kincaid. I figured somebody would have hanged you by now.
Bob Kincaid glared at Frank.
Morgan.
You know that feller?
I know him. That's Frank Morgan.
Frank Morgan?
You lawin' Morgan?
No.
Bounty hunting?
No, just passing through, Kincaid.
You better bypass that strip of land south of here, Morgan. Lots of folks down there would just love to put lead in you. Including me.
You want to try that now, Kincaid?
The outlaw smiled, exposing stained and rotten teeth.
I'll get my chance one of these days, Morgan. I can wait.
Frank turned his back to the man and walked to the bar.
Coffee. In a clean cup.
Picky, ain't you?
You have a clean cup?
Yeah. That suit your taste, Morgan?
Matter of fact, it does. Do I know you?
I seen you in Kansas right after the war. You gunned down a hothead named Cletus Head.
I remember. He pushed me into that fight.
Oh, he did for a fact.
The man moved away to the end of the bar and began polishing glasses with a rag that appeared to be dirtier than the glassware was. Bob Kincaid stood up and walked to the bar close to Frank.
Yeah. You're a fool, Morgan. You got no business coming into the Strip and sticking your damn nose into things that don't concern you.
Just passing through, Bob. As long as I'm left alone, I'll do the same for you and your kind.
Hell with you.
Kincaid walked out of the trading post. His friends followed him.
That man don't like you very much, Morgan. You best heed his words.
Nobody tells me where I can and can't go.
The Strip ain't like no other place in the country, Morgan. There ain't no law, no rules, excepting what a man can back up with a gun. And you just one man, one gun. Alone, with no friends in yonder.
That's certainly true.
You enjoy sticking your hand into a rattlesnake den?
Frank did not reply.
Ride on out of here, Morgan. I think you're a decent enough man. But that don't spell coyote crap in the Strip.
I need a few supplies.
You really going into no man's land?
I am.
You got any kin you want me to notify?
I'll send him a telegram when I come out.
Morgan, dead men don't send telegrams.
Gunfighter, The Burning, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2003, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Tom Simpson, Daniel Gavigan, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Jeff Baker, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Jason Stiles, Tony Nam, James Lewis, Jonathan Watkins, Kate Foster, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Mort Shelby, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Replogle, Nanette Savard, M.B. Van Dorn, and Colleen Delaney. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Joshua Cristiano. Dialogue editing by Johann Detweiler. Graphic Audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld and Brian Rogers. Original music and title theme by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other Graphic Audio thrillers.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics, Justice League of America, Wonder Woman,
Mythos.
When Hermione and Chloe read to you out of the ancient text, daughter, did they ever read you a story about an island of men?
You really think there is an island of warriors in this ocean?
Oracle?
Batman, something big just came up. I mean that literally. An island just popped up out of nowhere.
Magic.
I hate magic.
Tonight,
we set sail for Themyscira, where our weapons will taste blood.
Superman, you are possessed by Ares.
You ruined everything.
Who the hell died and made you queen, huh?
Come, Diana, puppet of Ares. One of us must die now.
I'm sorry, Mother.
Kill her!
No!
Now, the world will burn.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. The demon Dactyl came awake. It didn't seem such a momentous thing, just a gradual stirring in a deep cave in a far, empty mountain. An unnoticed event, seen by none save the caveworms and those few insomniacs among the bevy of weary bats hanging from the high ceiling. But the demon spirit had awakened, had come back from its long dormancy into the statue-like form it had left behind after its last visit to the world called Corona. The tangible, corporeal body felt good to the wandering spirit. The Dactyl could feel its blood, hot blood, coursing through its wings and mighty legs, could feel the twitching of its mighty muscles. Its eyes flickered open, but saw only blackness, for the form, left standing in magical stasis in the deep cave, head bowed and wings wrapped tightly about its torso, had been covered by magma. Most of the fiery stuff of that time long past had bubbled and flowed away from the cavern, but enough had remained to harden about the Dactyl's corporeal form. The spirit had come back to Corona, encased in obsidian. The demon spirit felt deep within itself, summoned its powers, both physical and magical. By sheer will and brute strength, the Dactyl flexed its wings. A thin crack ran down the center of the obsidian sarcophagus. The Dactyl flexed again. It stretched its great wings out to the side, clawed tips grasping and rending the air. The Dactyl threw back its head and opened wide its mouth. It voiced the sheer joy of its return, the anticipation of the chaos it would bring again to the quiet human kingdoms of Corona. Its torso resembled that of a tall, slender man, shaped and lined by corded strands of taut muscle and sporting a pair of tremendous bat-like wings, 20 feet across when fully extended, and with strength enough to lift a full-grown bull in swift flight. Its head, too, was somewhat human, except more angular, with a narrow jaw and pointed chin. The Dactyl's ears were pointed as well, poking up about the demon creature's thin tuft of black hair. Neither did that hair hide the creature's horns, thumb-sized and curling in toward each other at the top of the demon's brow. The texture of its skin was rough and thick, an armored hide, reddish in hue and shiny, as if lit by its own inner glow. Shining, too, were the demon's eyes, pools of liquid black at most times, but shifting to fiery red orbs, living flames when the demon was agitated, a glow of absolute hatred. The creature flexed and stretched, extended its wings to their full glory, reached and clawed at the air with its human-like arms. The demon extended its fingernails, transformed them into hooked claws, and grew its teeth, two pointed canines extending down over its bottom lip. Every part of the demon was a weapon, devastating and deadly. And yet, this demon's real strength lay in its mind and its purpose. The tempter of souls, the twister of hearts, the maker of lies.
How long has it been? How many decades, centuries have passed since my last visit to Corona?
The creature remembered that long ago time now, savored the thoughts of the streaming blood as army after army had joined in delicious, desperate battle. He saw again the elf who had rallied the humans and the other elves, Terran and Denonial, who chased Hippodactyl's armies back to the base of the mountain, Adar. Denonial himself had come into this cave after the beast, had skewered the Dactyl. Yet even in its death throes, the Dactyl had won the day, using its willpower to bring up the magma from the bowels of Ada. Denonial and much of his army had been consumed and destroyed.
I am eternal. I have returned. My physical wounds healed. What man, what elf will take Denonial's place?
Its thoughts turned from its enemies to those it would summon as minions. What creatures could the Dactyl gather this time to wage its war?
The goblins, certainly, full of anger and greed, delighting in murder and war. The Formorian giants of the mountains, few in number, but each with the strength of a dozen men, and a hide too thick and tough for a dagger to puncture. And the Powrys, yes, the Powrys. The cunning, warlike dwarves of the Julianthes, the Weathered Isles, who hate the humans above all others.
A line of drool hung low from the Dactyl's mouth as it considered its former and future allies, its army of woe.
I will bring them into my fold, tribe by tribe, race by race, growing as the night grows when the sun touches the western horizon. Hear me, Corona. Your twilight is at hand. I am awake!
Graphic Audio proudly presents R.A. Salvatore's epic saga, The Demon Wars. Coming soon.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.